As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Culture is the culture. It's 4 to 6 A to B, competitive excellence, and the brotherhood. The plan to win has never changed. So the culture here and the plan to win is always going to be here at Ohio State.
Welcome back to 4 to 6 with A&B, your Ohio State podcast brought to you by The Athletic. This is Bill Landis, joined by my best friend in the whole wide world, Ari Wasserman. Ari, how you doing?
Good. We were going to record the show on Wednesday afternoon, but we couldn't because there's a storm coming to Columbus, and Landis was going to the grocery store to stock up on all the essentials to make sure that they had enough goodies in their house for whatever is to come weather-wise. So, Bill, when you went to the store, and you were anticipating potentially being trapped in because you don't know how bad it can get, what did you buy?
Nothing super exciting.
Just go, take me down the list. I want to know what Bill's storm essentials are.
A beer. Got a case of beer. Got some Labatt Blue Light. Just trying to monitor the calories. And that really put a dent in all the work I would have done otherwise. Nothing crazy. I bought lunch meat. I got some chicken nugs. I did buy...
I can deal with chicken nuggets. I can live with that.
They sell Chick-fil-A sauce at Meijer, so I bought some Chick-fil-A sauce for the nugs.
Which one?
The actual Chick-fil-A sauce.
Oh, Chick-fil-A sauce.
Yeah. Did not buy any frozen pizza, which I think is what you were angling toward.
Yeah, I mean, you got to get some sort of frozen pizza snack, whether it be Bagel Bites, Hot Pockets, Totino's Pizza Rolls, but everybody has to have an emergency Red Baron in the freezer at all times.
We do not have, this is perilous times in the Landis household. We do not have an emergency Red Baron in the freezer for this winter.
Classic
storm.
Three cheese Red Baron emergencies. And honestly, it's offensive to me that you don't have an emergency Red Baron when you were stocking up for a potential emergency or weather emergency. So if by chance Columbus gets buried by snow and it's Snowmageddon, and you are trapped in your house with Leah on Sunday, you're going to be like, why didn't I buy the Red Baron? And it's like, I personally hope in my heart that there comes a point in time that you are longing for it and regretting that you didn't get one, only so that you learn your lesson moving forward to always have a Red Baron in your freezer at all times. And if you ever use that Red Baron, then you immediately replace it so it's always in there.
There's never not a Red Baron in my freezer.
That's right. Yeah, after I every single time I eat a Red Baron pizza, I go to the store to replace it. Like there's no time where there's a Red Baron where the freezer is, for lack of a better word, barren.
You know, my problem is that I have basically just, I have like a normal refrigerator freezer setup. Like I don't have those nice refrigerators where like the freezer's on the bottom and it's like a big drawer and there's a lot of room in there. I just have the one up top and space is limited and the Red Baron takes up a lot of space. So what I think I need is
you gotta lay it down flat and use it as the baseline. Come on, what are
No,
we
I know, here? But there's okay. there's other stuff in there too. What I think I need is like a separate, like people like meat freezers in their garages and stuff. I don't have a garage either, but I want to get a separate freezer only for Red Baron pizzas.
Yeah, well, we have two freezers, so that helps. Even when I lived in Columbus and had the same general setup as you, though, I always had a Baron in there.
Yeah, but you were living the bachelor life. It was just you. There was like there was four Red Barons in the freezer and like three Bud Light Limes in the fridge, and that's all that was in your house.
What you need to do is walk into the other room when your fiance comes home and just say, listen, this is how it's going to be in this house. We're going to have a Red Baron in here at all times. And if that's a problem for you, then we can discuss our relationship.
I think that's fair, because that would be a deal breaker.
Yeah, and like, what is she going to say? No? Like, she's anti-Red Baron?
She's not anti-Red Baron.
Yeah.
At least I don't think so.
Like, I think my wife is anti-Red Baron, and now I'm wondering if I made the wrong decision.
Well, I got some bad news for you, bud. You're stuck there. Sorry about that.
We got a lot of tweets over the week about where the podcast was last week. I'm sorry, I was on vacation. The band did not break up. But everybody was saying we want grab ass. We don't want football. So there was 5 minutes of grab ass.
There you go. Should we talk about the Bucks, though?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Right. Now, go ahead and host us into the show.
Yeah. So there's been, this is a 2 week little hiatus for us. So there's been a good amount happening. I guess off the top, just to put a bow on Ohio State's 2022 recruiting class. We're recording this on Thursday morning. Wednesday was the second signing period, which has sort of become like the, I don't know, it's certainly not as important as December signing period now.
It can be, though. I will push back on that.
It certainly can be, but, you know, sometimes, too, coaches just, like, blow it off and fly to Minnesota to interview for NFL jobs on that day because the day doesn't matter.
I want to talk about that, too. I'm happy that you brought both of those things up. But the thing that's awesome about the, again, like, it kind of just hit me this year because, yes, everybody knows that the traditional signing day no longer exists in its truest form. Everybody signs in December, that's signing day, right? But the players who sign in December, for the most part, are the ones that want to lock up their spots, want to sign their signatures, want to formally accept their scholarships, and are, you know, a lot of times, not always, because plenty of five stars and top 100 players sign early, are more worried about their spots, right? In general, the players who push it all the way back are the ones that have a spot no matter where they go, which means that they're really, really good. And like, for the fact that there wasn't as much volume on Wednesday, there were still three top 10 players who announced. There were still plenty of five-star prospects, top 100 players. I thought it was a very eventful day. It's just Ohio State wasn't really involved, so it might seem more boring than normal.
That's a fair point. Ohio State had two guys that was looking to sign, Carson Hinsman, offensive lineman from Wisconsin, and Omari Abor, defensive end from Texas. Both those guys signed. I guess there was a little bit of intrigue with Abor, who committed early January and then was supposed to take visits, but from everything I could tell, never did, and just kind of like shut it down and then signed with Ohio State kind of, you know, under the radar, I think without a ceremony and stuff like that on Wednesday. And then the only other guy they were kind of on was Christian Miller, the defensive lineman from Georgia, and he signed with Georgia, which I think everyone expected. So it was uneventful for Ohio State, but not uneventful on the whole year. And I do think you're right that typically the guys that are signing on that second period are really good. But also, there's guys in the class who are like my favorite players in the class, or the guys who are like under-recruited, don't sign in December, and then blow up in January because classes are trying to fill holes, and those guys are kind of the last guy standing.
I mean, that's kind of what I went to. I went to an announcement on Wednesday for three-star running back Andrew Paul, and it's like he ended up at Georgia, and he was in October was considering Sam Houston State, Texas State, and someone else. And it's like, how much is it over or under evaluation, or how much is it a scarcity? You know, and that's all, you know, part of it, right?
Yeah, and Ohio State didn't have a guy like that in this class. I'm trying to think the last guy that Ohio State has had that's, like, fit that bill. Enoch Vimahi was like a name that no one had heard before. And then after Ryan Day took the head coaching job, like got on a plane to Hawaii and spent like an hour there and locked down Enoch Vimahi and came home.
That to me is still the most torturous recruiting trip of all time.
Yeah. Hop on a Southwest flight.
To Hawaii. And what is that? Like a 10 hour travel time? Cause it's, I think it's 4.5 or 5 hours from California.
He was in Texas. I believe he was in Texas. So I think he flew from like Texas to Arizona to Honolulu and was, I think like literally there for like an hour or two and then hopped on a plane and flew back.
And like the thing that was the worst about it isn't just the travel time, Bill. It's when you get to the destination, it's a place that you'd want to stay.
Right, yeah.
It's not like you flew 12 hours to Transylvania and then came back. Like, you flew to the place that everybody bears terrible travel days for in order to enjoy.
Yeah.
And it's if you got one whiff of that fresh Hawaiian air, you go to the high school or the house or wherever he went and lock the kid down and then go right to the airport. He said he never saw the ocean.
Well, he flew over it.
Well, no, but he never saw it when he landed, I'm saying. Like, there was no coastline.
Right. And the fact that Ryan Day had to do that in his first recruiting class as head coach is why they have a new offensive line coach this year, finally. We talked with Ohio State's new assistant coaches earlier this week. I think we'll talk about that in a little bit, but wanted to start off with what happened on Wednesday. So Ohio State didn't not have an official signing day press conference. Ryan Day spoke earlier in the week. Just wasn't a whole lot going on to kind of hold a separate signing day press conference. But Wednesday was, I think, what I consider one of my favorite days of the year in terms of media availabilities. And I'm curious your thoughts on that. I know you don't do it anymore, but we got to talk with the 11 early enrolled freshmen and the two new transfers that Ohio State brought in during the offseason. So it was like all these guys that we followed during recruiting, and you get to talk to some of them, maybe not all of them. I have not talked to all of them before this week, but that is, I think, probably one of my top five favorite days on this beat is when we get to talk to however many of the early enrolled freshmen do show up in January.
Certainly, especially considering the fact that a lot of times Ohio State recruits high-profile players that don't talk much during their recruitments. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they wait till the end or they don't talk, and then they sign and then they disappear, and then the first time you're talking to them, I mean, not with us. I mean, we really cover the hell out of recruiting, and for the most part, we've spoken to most of them. But I remember when Tate Martell came in, how big of a deal that was. You know what I mean? And how, I'm trying to remember who the most anticipated interviews were at Ohio State once they arrived. And I think Jack Miller was one of them. Kyle McCord, Jack Miller, CJ Stroud, that whole thing. Together, they were sitting in the same room, and was a big deal. But yes, it's certainly one of the best days of the year. And the thing too is that you have to battle is that you have half the media that's completely and utterly aware of how recruiting works and what they went through. And then you have to sit through questions from TV people about how good does it feel to be an Ohio State Buckeye. It's just like, there is a little bit of a drawback of just like, I'm not trying to be mean, but yesterday when I was at the Andrew Paul, or Wednesday, we're recording this on Thursday, February 3rd, when I was at the Andrew Paul announcement, this kid picks between Georgia, Clemson, and Michigan, puts his hat on, and then I was in a scrum talking to him for the story I'm trying to write, and these television reporters are asking him, so when did Georgia offer? And it's just like, do you not have even the baseline knowledge of what's going on here? These are things that you could have looked up and asked interesting questions about. So I get super annoyed when I can't just ask all the questions that I want to ask. Right. But it certainly is when they have tables. And then, of course, people rotate and they break off and you get your time. But who was your favorite of the 11 to talk to and why?
Devin Brown.
Oh, yeah? Is he a little swaggy to him?
He's got a little swag to him, yeah. He's and I think
we kind of... He's number one quarterback and number one player overall in the class.
Yeah, I don't know about all that, but he's good. I think he's good. And he's when he signed, Ryan Day talked about how Devin Brown's got a little bit of a magnetism to him, and just kind of really lifts up a room. People are drawn to him, and I think he could pick up on some of that through the recruiting process. But then when he sits down and he came out, and I want to say there was one other person talking, and it was George Fitzpatrick. the only offensive lineman who's early enrolled. And Devin Brown sat down, and, like, everybody went to Devin Brown's table. Of course, I stayed by myself and asked George Fitzpatrick, like, two other questions and then left, because I have to get a one-on-one with an offensive lineman. But it was Devin Brown and 50 media members, and, like, the kid, like, was just holding court. And I thought, it doesn't mean anything, but I thought the way he carried himself was pretty impressive for a kid who should still be in high school. And then he's really smart, too. He's sharp. He had good answers on, like, football stuff, I thought. But there's just something
about him, like, how to run Spider 2Y Banana?
Well, I asked him, I think I might have mentioned this before.
A Landis question?
Well, yeah, yeah.
And so what do you do when the backside corner is showing blitz there's a stunt in the middle?
I'm sure people roll their eyes when I do it. But I asked him about, like, his high school offense with Joe Germain, because it was, like, based off, like, the Saints stuff that Joe Germain was doing when he was
in the
NFL.
Did anybody write a story about that, by the way?
It's such an
interesting story to me.
I did a Q&A with Joe Germain about it.
Oh, I must have missed that. Was I on vacation or something?
I don't know. It was in December. Maybe.
Okay, well then I guess we did write a story about it.
Yeah,
my bad, Bill. I don't mean to offend you.
It's all right. Some other people did as well. It's like not. It's interesting. It's not super interesting. And then Devin Brown left that high school and played in Utah his senior year, so he didn't play for Joe Germain every year. But, like, he played in two very different offenses at those two different schools. And, like, I asked him some stuff about that. And just a sharp kid. Like, I think people are going to probably get carried away with it a little bit because it's easy to. Because you're just so excited to talk to somebody who seems, like, engaged and wants to talk to you. That happens a lot with media members. So, like, I'm sure people will, like, take that and run with it. And make maybe outsized projections about Devin Brown, even though he's been on campus for 2 weeks. But he was certainly...
You mean when a player is warm and funny and sharp, that if the media feels like you like them, then they'll like you? Like, is that kind of like what it is?
Correct. Yeah, it's like dating. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's not like dating. There are some men who will automatically like any woman who is interested in them, and there are some men that have a certain standard that they won't negotiate. And... I think we know what the majority of the media, which one they are. The only criteria for being in a relationship is that the other person likes you. Like, they have a pulse and they like you.
That seems like step one. Yeah. 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 Everything else I think you can figure out.
And it doesn't matter what other qualities this person has.
Yeah. I really enjoy talking with him.
By the way, you just did it.
No, I know. It's hard. It's difficult not to. It's like, Devin Brown shows up, because the other thing with Devin Brown is, like, I don't know how many people on the beat, like, actually watch the recruits. I think, you know, and it's fine, you don't have to, but, like, in my mind, it was, like, the combination of what I saw from watching him play on video with his personality. It was like, okay, like, there's something with this kid. But I'm also, like, he's got to beat out Kyle McCord. And I thought the same thing about Kyle McCord, excuse me, last year talking with him. So... I don't think, like, Devin Brown being, like, a cool dude doesn't mean he's going to be the starter.
God, I miss Quinn Ewers right now.
I wonder what the vibe would have been with Quinn Ewers. Well, you talk, like, when you talk with Quinn Ewers at the opening, was it, like, was he holding court? Like, because he seemed a little
standoffish, if I'm going to be honest with you.
Right, which is fine. Like,
it's also shifts, too, because... There's certain points in your recruitment where you don't want to talk to the media.
100%.
And then the second you want to, then you can change. Mm-hmm. Like Andrew Paul, the perfect example. Like, I went to his high school and wrote a profile about him a month ago or 3 weeks ago. 2-3-word answers. And then yesterday he was like a quote machine. So just like, I think that people can change just based on the circumstances of whether or not they like it. I only talked to Quinn Ewers one time. And, you know, I'm not saying he was a bad quote, but it didn't seem like he was overly enthusiastic about talking. And it's probably because he just got done working out for 5 hours at the opening, and then you had a bunch of, you know, cargo shorts wearing men walk up to you with microphones in your face. And it's like, I get it. Like, and, you know, he was gracious and, you know, said the things that we needed him to say. And, you know, I do wonder, I will say this, being in Texas, and I don't want to make this a Quinn Ewers thing, but he is a big deal here.
Oh, huge deal. Yeah.
Like, for instance, just got an accountant for the first time in my life. And I was on the phone with this accountant on Wednesday, and he's a Texas fan because we're in Dallas, right? And he goes, so what do you do for a living? I said, I'm a national college football writer. And I didn't even tell him that I used to cover Ohio State. And he goes, what do you think of Quinn Ewers? And I was like, Jesus Christ, man. You know, but that's kind of like, I think it's very interesting to see how his career pans out. But, you know, I think Ohio State's in a very similar situation as they were a year ago, where they have three guys on the roster and even a better situation. I think you can make a case because now C.J. Stroud has already, you know, legitimized himself as one of the Heisman favorites going into next year and as the starter of this football team. So, you know, with three top 100 players on your roster and a bona fide starter returning, I think that's a pretty good place to be, especially considering the fact that the freshman who's on the team knew what he signed up for, and they'd be insane to transfer. You know what I mean? Like, so you're right. At least going to get one more year. And C.J. Stroud, I think that there's a, you know how we always play that game of just like what's the quarterback situation going to look like in 2 years from now and how we're always wrong? Mm-hmm. I think I can see a very straight line path to a Devin Brown, Kyle McCord battle for that spot, which I think is probably a really exciting thing for Ohio State. If CJ, because I think CJ Stroud will leave after next year, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. And I think it'd be kind of, it'd be crazy to say like, well, CJ Stroud's going to be the quarterback this year and he's going to leave. And then like Kyle McCord's going to be the quarterback in 2023 and he's going to leave. Like he'd be eligible to, but I don't know if that'd be realistic, but I suppose.
I think the realistic thing would be that whoever loses the battle between Devin Brown and McCord will stay or go.
I would anticipate that they'll both be around in 23 and then maybe after that, there's some movement. Devin Brown said, like, I don't know. He said, like, I'm not going to transfer. So I don't know what that means. Maybe he's just super confident that he's going to be the next starting quarterback at Ohio State. I wouldn't put too much stock into those words or hold it against him, you know, down the road. He's just a kid talking in a press conference. But I think he is – I do think he is in on the idea of hanging around here for a couple years and developing and then maybe – when he comes up for air, and if he doesn't think he's going to be the starter here, because we don't know who they're going to bring in 2023 too. They could bring in like Jaden Davis, and then that changes the calculus as well. But I do think he's on board with the idea of developing here for a couple of years, even if he's not on the field at the soonest possible moment. He rose a little bit in the recruiting rankings too. You said, you know, On3 has him number one, which I think is a little crazy, but even in 247 composite,
number one overall nationally, right?
Yeah, he's like, I think I probably like Drew Aller more than him. Like Cade Klubnik is pretty good. But I think he's a bona fide
top number five. Number one overall player.
Yeah. He's top five.
Not quarterback player, right?
I believe that is the case. He's definitely a top five quarterback for like, I think I'm be pretty confident in that. And he's a top 50 overall player in a 247 composite. So, really good. It's not like, some throw in that Ohio State had to land because Quinn Ewers left. Like this kid is, if Kyle McCord wasn't on the roster, it was like, yeah, C.J. Stroud and Devin Brown's the heir apparent, I think everybody would be really excited about that.
Okay, so. But here's the thing. Like, Devin Brown is not a better football player than Travis Hunter.
No.
He's not a better football player than Walter Nolan or Luther Burden or Damani Jackson. Right? Is he a better football player than C.J. Hicks or Harold Perkins?
I think I could maybe come around on the idea that he might be the best player in Ohio State's class.
I mean, if that's the case, then Ohio State's in a really, really good spot.
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard to say. Like, once you get like to the very top, it's like, I don't have no idea if he's better than C.J. Hicks. Like, ask me again in 2 years.
I think he could be. Somebody write that down in their calendar and have me ask Bill Landis if he's better than C.J. Hicks in 2 years.
Yeah, I definitely
think. Wouldn't that be funny if somebody in 2 years on Twitter was like, hey, I think it's time to ask Bill if C.J. Hicks is better than Devin Brown.
Because we'll get our guy Dan on the case.
Dan.
Yeah. Another guy who we talked to on Wednesday who I came away pretty impressed by was Kai Stokes, who's like a low four-star safety, and I think maybe at the time he committed was a three-star prospect. And he's rated as an athlete, which I think can impact a guy's recruiting ranking sometimes. But he's one of these players that I think is kind of rare that like didn't do the camp thing, like didn't go around in the summer and like try to get in front of talent evaluators from these recruiting sites and like try to boost his stock. And he said something that I thought was kind of interesting, Ari, and I didn't know if maybe you've heard this from other players like covering it from a more national perspective. He said, so he was a receiver mostly in high school. He goes to Armwood High School in Florida, same high school as Brian Snead. and he was a receiver, and he switched over to defense, and he's only been playing safety for like 2 years. And he said he didn't want to go to the camps because he felt he was like still like a developmental player, and he didn't want to go to a camp and like not perform at his best and then get like negatively impacted by that. So he chose rather to just like kind of like fly under the radar and be recruited more off of his high school film than off of whatever he might have done on the camp circuit. And I don't know that I've ever heard a prospect.
I've never heard a prospect say that.
But I thought it was interesting.
I do too. I think that there might be a story there of just like the negative impact that camps can have if you're changing your position or... But here's the thing about camps, Bill, and why I probably don't agree with that. These camps are athleticism tests. Mm-hmm. You know, they make them run the 40, they make them jump high, they do all the cone drills. Like, all those camps are basically just made to put people through physical activity to see which ones are the most dynamic, natural talents. You know, and I'm not saying that if you go out and you play safety and other five-star safeties are out there looking better than you, that that wouldn't have a negative impact. But, like, listen, and I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus here, but Legend Cavazos turned into a top 100 player because he was super athletic. You know, like, there was nothing refined about his game as a defensive back at the high school level. You know what I mean?
He wasn't a top 100 player.
Didn't he, like, ascend into, like, the – where was he?
I think when he was very young, he was rated very highly because of that, and then – dropped a little
bit.
Did
he drop? Okay.
Yeah. He ended
but
up
still, like, I mean, he got an Ohio State offer for being an unrefined, and I think, like, he became a recruitable prospect at these camps.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's right. Yeah. I think that's true.
So, you know, I think that the more visibility that you have, if you can run and jump and tackle, you know, is good. But I also think, too, that, like, if you're a really good football player, you don't need to go to the camps to get found because they'll find you. So it's kind of a two-pronged outlook.
Yeah, and like I think like when Kai Stokes committed, it was like, and it happens a lot, and I try not to like, I don't want to say it about every like under the radar player that Ohio State gets a commitment from or signs, but there was like a real kind of buzz that Ohio State had unearthed something when they got Kai Stokes, and he's a low four-star prospect who had like Alabama, and I don't know, like maybe that's committable, not committable, I don't know. He had Auburn, Florida, you know, LSU, Miami, like this was a kid that was still recruited pretty heavily, even though he was, you know, a borderline three-star prospect. So, and he also, like a little bit of his positional outlook kind of changed with the coaching staff change. He said that when Matt Barnes and Kerry Combs were here, they were thinking of him more as like a corner or maybe like a cover safety, but like playing in the slot and starting out a corner before maybe going to safety. And now he says he feels like he has the vibe from this new staff that he's going to get his first shot at free safety. So, and he said like people are comparing him to Josh Proctor, which is like, cool, I guess. He's been here for 3 weeks, so I don't know.
Is there a transitive property in college football where if you are compared to the person that's compared to Malik Hooker that you're like really good?
That's right. Yeah. Maybe he will. Josh Proctor has not been Malik Hooker. Maybe he will be if he's healthy next year. Or maybe like skips a generation.
I don't think he's going to be Malik Hooker ever.
Maybe he skips a generation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Malik Hooker was really good. It's like, oh, yeah. I get why we do it because it's an easy shorthand. But it's just like we do it with like Zach Harrison and like the Bosas and Chase Young. It's like they're not the same, man.
Can I ask you a question? Like, and like, it isn't. I'm not even saying that Josh Proctor is not good. So like, don't take it that way. But if you like went and looked at that, the single greatest play you've ever seen on the Ohio State beat, what would you say? I have two.
The touchdown or the interception that Malik Hooker had against Clemson in the Fiesta Bowl in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Is one of them. The second one, I don't know. I wasn't covering the team when Braxton scored his 1 yard touchdown against Penn State, but I watched it. That's pretty impressive.
Those were my two most impressive plays. And it's like, can't you just turn on the film and like watch Josh Proctor play in high school and go, yeah, dude, he's just physically not capable of doing what that man just did. And then just like completely shut the book on those comparisons right out of the gate. Like, or is that not fair to the developing prospect?
I think it would be more fair to do that. And if you're
But
wrong,
I wonder, too, if you go back and you look at Malik Hooker's high school tape, which I haven't done in 7 years, if you could sense that type of athleticism from him on his tape. So, like, I don't know. It's just really hard to do it. And whenever we – and at Ohio State, there are so many good players that come and go into the league early. And, you know, every year there's first round draft picks, but it's just like, stop comparing people to Orlando Pace. Stop comparing yes. people to Malik Hooker. If Kai Stokes is really good, then he'll be a really good version of Kai Stokes. And that's, I mean, like, listen, dude, another one of the kids that you spoke with on Wednesday is Caleb Burton. And I went to Austin and wrote a story about how he's taking the Garrett Wilson path. So, I am with it, too. But, like, I didn't compare him directly to Garrett Wilson. I just meant, like, he's from Austin, is taking the same path as he is. Just nobody's going to be Orlando Pace. If somebody's better than Orlando Pace, we'll visit it when that happens. We'll have a nice discussion.
Trust me, we will be visiting that when it happens. if it happens,
Landis will have his shirt off.
yeah. That'll be my favorite thing I've ever done. I might retire after that happens.
Yeah,
because I won't get
it's
any
that
better.
Elmo gif, right, where he just like has his arms up and there's a bunch of lights coming out from behind him.
Oh, right.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
But yeah, so Caleb Burton.
I did not spend. It's hard because like I'm one guy there, and there's like seven people talking at one time.
And I already wrote the best possible story there is to write about him.
No, actually, that actually entered my thought process. It was like no, it did. It's like I already wrote about this kid, like, and his story has changed because he got hurt.
Yeah,
but I did spend a little bit of time over at his table. Just to like try to get a feel for where he was coming off the knee injury to like cost him most of his junior year, and he said like he played last year like not quite feeling like himself, but he did say he feels back to being basically the player he was before that injury. Because remember, like he really fell off in these rankings. Like when he committed, he was a borderline five-star prospect, right?
No, he was a five-star.
He was a five-star, and yeah. now he's outside the top 100, and which I guess is fair. It's like he didn't play what he's supposed to do. But then like Devin Brown was talking about Caleb Burton and how explosive he's looked when they've just kind of been out like throwing the ball around with Devin and Caleb and Keon Graves and the defensive backs who were early in role two, just all the young guys kind of out there just kind of getting some work in. And he said like Caleb really jumps out at you and honestly with some of the stuff that I think people would say about Garrett Wilson, which is like explosiveness, body control, catch radius, like all that stuff, which I think is like, I think it's fine to compare skill sets like that. Like whether or not they match a production is another thing. Yeah. But I do think that Caleb
Burton, he's coming off an injury when I talked to him.
Yeah, he has a tremendous opportunity to like really outperform what his final recruiting ranking ended up being.
Well, you know what's an interesting story, Bill, is that how recruiting rankings really, how accurate are they when you start reorganizing them for senior years? Mm-hmm. Because they're so heavy with early discovered players, right? And like I was having this discussion with a high school coach yesterday. It's like if you're not discovered early, then how do you get up into the rankings if you're a late riser, right? Or if you get into the rankings early and you get injured, how, like, it's just like, I feel like what 247 composite tells you in the last six months, or maybe even to whittle it down a little bit more to like the last 2 months of a recruiting cycle is kind of interesting.
Yeah, there was a time when Caleb Burton was a top 10 player in this class.
Yeah.
And now he's number 131. And I'm not going to pretend like I'm an expert on this entire class and certainly not in the entire receiver field. But from what I know of Caleb Burton, I find it hard to believe that there are 20 receivers in this class that are better than him. But that's where he's at. He's the 21st receiver.
Yeah. And his dad's a football coach. So, like, I mean, that also kind of helps in the, you know, in that realm. So, yeah, he's certainly somebody that I believe is worth tracking. And, you know, in a world where Ohio State has five-star prospects on his roster at any given time at the receiver position, it's kind of easy to lose track of some. But just like, we might be watching the spring game in April or whatever it's going to be, and Caleb Burton's going to perform like Marvin Harrison Jr. It's like, oh boy, here we go again, you know?
So, yeah, well, I actually wanted to ask you that because I find him interesting, and I also find I find Keon Graves very interesting too, because he's a guy whose ranking has really improved over the course of his time being committed to Ohio State, and Brian Hartline was kind of in on him early when Keon was committed to Arizona. But I'm wondering with both these guys, like obviously Jackson Smith and Jigba is back and he's going to get the majority of the work. And I realize I'm asking this in a world where two former number one receivers are waiting in the wings and Marvin Harrison Jr. is waiting in the wings. But does it feel like to you at all that there's an opening for guys like Caleb Burton and Keon Graves to get on the field as true freshmen because there's just not much else coming back in terms of production besides Jackson Smith and Jigba?
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about like a 4 or 5 person system, right?
Sure. Yeah.
So like, I think that I don't know where I am on the receiver stuff. And I want to know what your take is, actually. But sometimes I feel like, and I don't subscribe to the you have too many good players problem. But sometimes I think it's better to have 3 dudes that you can count on and like not overthink it. You know what I mean? 3 dudes that play the majority of the snaps. You know, your number one receiver is clearly outlined. You know who you're going to be relying on the most, and you just run with those guys. It's like sometimes I feel like the confusion of who should be on the field right now is a problem. So like to me, like, if Jackson Smith and Jigba is just, like, the number one receiver without question next year, I think that could be a good thing.
I think so, too. And I don't anticipate him coming off the field. It's what happens at those other 2 spots, or if they decide to play more with 4 receivers, which they might because they're a little light at tight end. But I don't think, like, whatever happens with those other guys I think has no impact whatsoever on Jackson. Jackson, he's, like, the focal point of the offense, in my opinion. But then there's two, I would assume, outside spots for Julian Fleming, Emeka Ibuka, Marvin Harrison, Keon Graves, Caleb Burton, Kojo Antwi, and Caleb Brown will be here in the summer. Like, I don't know if I'd be shocked by any of those other names I just listed off.
I mean, do you think it's already clear that Marvin Harrison's one of them?
Right now, yeah, but...
No, like, he's already got the spot.
I think, yeah, probably, but I don't know. Like, we all kind of got to that place from watching him in the spring game, right? And I think, and but based off what some people have said about him, but I also think that the same things could be said about Caleb Burton in 6 weeks when spring ball starts.
Marvin Harrison, like, caught multiple touchdowns in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, he did. No, I'm not. He's good. He's very good.
Yeah,
I think you're right. I think he will be a major part of the offense next year. But if one of these younger receivers, it's incoming, like, really makes a jump, I think there's an opening there because I don't think anyone outside of Jackson like has a stranglehold on the position.
You don't think that Harrison does?
He's probably the closest, but I don't know how you can say that because like based off one game.
I think he's really good.
I think he's awesome. I think they're all.
I think I've seen enough to know that he's really really good.
Yeah, I agree. I don't disagree with that. I think he's very good. I guess maybe I would be surprised. Like if he like fell down the pecking order, I guess
like Caleb Burton jumped over him on the depth chart, and then all of a sudden Marvin Harrison was playing 7 snaps a game. I think that would be very surprising.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. That's probably more of a measured thing to say. Yeah,
which is crazy because I'm usually not that. It's not my role on this podcast.
That's right. That's right. But I do find myself because there's 2 of these guys that are here right now is Caleb Burton and Keon Graves, and I think getting here early does matter in a lot of cases. And I do feel like there's like a door cracked just a little bit from one of those 2 guys maybe to emerge as like the, even if they're not number 1 or number 2, like the number 4 receiver, which is a guy who I think in next year's offense could play quite a bit. I don't know, just something I was thinking yesterday as those 2 guys were talking.
I mean, if Caleb Burton is healthy, I mean, I think he has the physical traits and the natural ability to do that.
Yeah, and I think Keon Graves does too. I think Keon Graves is like a really polished route runner right now. Just like has a knack for knowing how to get open.
I worry about his size a little.
Yep, I think that's fair. And I wonder, I don't think he's a slot receiver. I think you can move him around, but if they kind of view him more as a slot receiver, then obviously he's going to be blocked by Jackson Smith and
Jay. I just resent the fact that he didn't go to my alma mater.
Arizona still had a good class, though, right?
The highest class in program history, 24.
Look at that. What's their
coach's fishing.
Name?
We're fishing.
Jed Fish, yeah. Jed Fish, who everybody panned when they hired him for that job, goes to show that if you just put in a little bit of effort, you can actually get some stuff done. Something that Kevin Sumlin apparently did not understand when he was coaching at Arizona. Mm-hmm. One more.
He got paid, though.
He did get paid. It's always important to get paid. I want your take on this, and we'll move on to coaches. There are 11 early enrolled freshmen. CJ Hicks, Devin Brown, Keon Graves, Gabe Powers, Caden Curry, Kayla Burton, Jair Brown, George Fitzpatrick, Ryan Turner, Kai Stokes, Bennett Christian. Of those 11, which guy are you the most intrigued by?
It's without question CJ Hicks.
Hicks, yeah. I think
because of the position he plays too.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for Ryan Shazier to show up and save the Ohio State football program.
No pressure. Yeah. No pressure on CJ Hicks.
In comparison, he's just like Ryan Shazier.
Yes, yes, yes.
In his prime in the NFL, not at Ohio State.
Peak Ryan Shazier. That is what we already expect CJ Hicks to be as a true freshman.
I just want somebody to play like that. I'm not saying they have to be as good. I just want a linebacker to play like that and blow shit up. Is that too much to ask?
No.
If I were the linebackers coach at Ohio State, I would just play clips of Andy Katzenmoyer and and CJ Hicks, and I'm just be like, you see the ball, you run, and then you I feel like Ohio State's linebackers don't tackle through the ball carrier. They just kind of arrive and then lay down next to the person.
Hope they trip over them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I just go in that scene in Old School when they get super competitive and Will Ferrell's just rip his head off.
Yeah, no, you want to see a badass at linebacker, right? It's been a while. Yeah.
Who's the last badass Ohio State's had at linebacker?
Darren Lee definitely had some badass moments.
Yeah, okay, well, if that's where we're starting, then that's the problem. So, okay. Yeah,
that was 7
let's
years
get
ago.
Some, let's get a fucker in there with a neck roll, okay? Come on, let's...
I don't know about that.
Why?
Yeah. Because the neck roll guys are usually slow dudes.
Dude, the neck roll guides are Paul Posluszny, right? Isn't he a neck roll guy?
Yeah, if Paul Posluszny was playing college football now, he'd be a guard.
Didn't you eat lunch with him one time?
I used to. I lived in the dorm rooms that were closest to the on-campus apartments where the football players lived, and we shared a dining hall. So I used to, when I could, get in line behind the football players, because the football players always got more food and sometimes better food. So I would get in line behind the football players because I'm a big dude, and they would just assume I was a football player. So I got to eat what Paul Posluszny was eating, which was 45 hard-boiled eggs.
Okay, I want to play a game. Are you ready? I'm going to name linebackers that I can remember that wore neck rolls, and you're going to tell me what position they'd be playing if they played at Ohio State this year, okay?
Okay.
Brian Bosworth.
Defensive tackle.
Leighton Vander Esch.
Tight end.
Howie Long.
Howie Long. Guard. Center.
So you don't think Brian Bosworth would be a linebacker?
No, the Boz is a freak.
Guy would eat your face.
The Boz is an animal, yeah.
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 And it's just I don't even know if we're talking about... did Mike Allstott wear a neck roll?
Yeah, I think so.
He did, but it was under his pads, so it didn't look quite as good.
He was a fullback, though.
Jalen Smith wore a neck roll. I think Jonathan Vilma wore a neck roll, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
What about what position would Jonathan Vilma play?
Probably still a linebacker, maybe a rush end.
The neck roll is just a personality trait. It's not an accessory that's safe that makes you play safer. It's just if you wear a neck roll, it's a statement that you're going to kill somebody.
Yeah, you're about that life if you're wearing a neck
roll. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, okay. So That was my only point. And
I can get on board with it. All right, CJ.
I don't know why they went on a stunt. Yes. Could you imagine, like, the most athletic, slim, fast freak of nature just wearing a neck roll? His 40 time goes down by half a second the second he puts that thing on.
Yeah. I find CJ Hicks is also my guy. And I didn't go to his table at all on Wednesday because I went to his high school like a month and a half ago and talked with him. And I figured he didn't need another person asking him about Al Washington not being there anymore. So I didn't do that. But I think he's got the mental makeup to handle it if his skills are up to par for him to get on the field ahead of the guys who are coming back at linebacker. And I think they might be.
Why don't you answer it?
Hicks would be my answer as well. Number two, I think I think I've said it before, Bennett Christian, it's not the sexiest answer. I get that. But like talking with him again on Wednesday, like I feel more convinced that he's going to play a lot as a true freshman, mostly out of necessity. But also because I think he is as ready as any tight end they've brought into the program over the last 5-6 years to do what they need a tight end to do as a true freshman. He's 242 pounds, was almost exclusively used as a blocking tight end in high school and like in a heavy I formation, run the ball every play kind of offense. And that's what they need this tight end position to do at Ohio State. And I think he's ready for it. So I think in the end he might play the most of any true freshman, at least on the offensive side.
What high school did he go to?
I have to look that up now. Somewhere in Georgia.
Yeah, I just want you to look it up.
Is it Allatoona?
Yeah. And Allatoona. I just misread it because I always call it Altoona, which is funny to me because you and I had a wonderful night in Altoona, Pennsylvania one time.
We did. Yeah, this is Allatoona High School is in the same area like where Justin Fields is from because Justin Fields High School like played Allatoona in a state title game like 2 or 3
years. I just assume that like everything in Georgia is just a suburb of Atlanta somewhere.
Mostly. I think that's fair.
Like Atlanta is like 80% of the state and then the Atlanta and the surrounding areas and then you have small towns.
It's like it's the beach, Atlanta, and then the border with Alabama. that's all that Georgia is.
Atlanta's like the only major southern city, right? I guess Houston, if you count Houston.
New Orleans?
Yeah.
I had a nice dinner one time at a Zaxby's in Jackson, Mississippi.
By yourself?
No, I was with Leah. We were driving from Dallas to Georgia. By the way, speaking of Jackson, J.P. Andrade, the former walk-on quarterback at Ohio State, transferred to Jackson State, which is awesome. He's going to back up Shador Sanders at Jackson State.
Good for him.
That's great, yeah. Love it. And Jagger, different quarterback name. Jagger LaRoe. Jagger LaRoe has transferred to Texas A&M Commerce, which is stepping up into FCS this year. And I think
I thought that was just the section of Texas A&M's football building.
That's what they call the recruiting department now, yeah. Texas A&M Commerce.
You took my joke from me, man. Can I say something that's unrelated to football? I think Zaxby sucks.
Do you like it better than Cane's?
No.
Interesting. I like it better than Cane's.
Now, here's the thing. I've only had Zaxby's one time, and I'm willing to admit that it's possible I just got a shitty order. But I also got wings with my order, too, and they were terrible. And I thought the chicken tenders were just average. Crinkle-cut fries were the bottom-of-the-barrel type of fry. And the toast wasn't as good as Cane's. And I'm not, I can't tell you, I go to maybe Raising Cane's once every 7 months. I'm not a huge chicken tender only person. But like, I was not impressed and I don't understand the crazy nature toward it. Because you love it, don't you?
I do love it. I try not to eat it as much because it's terrible for you.
But there isn't one in Columbus anyway, so.
The closest one to Columbus is in Indianapolis, I think. And there's also a couple in Kentucky. I've not had it in quite a while. But I think Cane's, fries are better. I think Cane's toast is better, like you said. I like Zaxby's chicken tenders better because they're seasoned a little bit, which I like. But Cane's are bigger, which probably matters to some people. And the texture's a little different. The sauce is more or less the same. And Zaxby's has a more expansive menu. Like, you can get a salad there if you want. The fact that okay, you like,
well, I'm not going to rate my chicken finger place because they have good salads on their menu.
Well, I like the idea of like being able to still eat the chicken fingers you want to eat, but like eat it on a bed of lettuce so you feel a little better about, but feel a little bit better about yourself. It's just tricking the mind.
Yeah.
But like the fact that I can't go to Cane's and get like four Cane's tenders with some sauce on them on top of a bed of lettuce, like that doesn't make any sense to me. How hard is that?
Yeah, but like the thing I don't understand about lettuce, Bill, is there's no nutritional value. There might be some vitamins in it, but like it's zero calories. It's just water.
I like, so if you're going to
eat your chicken fingers on lettuce, like you're not doing your body any, you're just eating water. So like just eat the chicken fingers like a slob and move on with your day. Like what?
Well, you're filling yourself. You're filling yourself with something that doesn't.
So you've filled your stomach up with lettuce and it's caused you to eat less chicken before?
No, but if I eat a chicken tender salad, I might be full enough where I don't feel like I need to eat my body weight in French fries.
Yeah. I've just never eaten a bunch of chicken tenders and thought, well, I had a healthy lunch, or I'm not going to have fries. Like, to me, like, I'm like torpedoing the day.
Yeah, once
I'm eating four chicken tenders dipped in that Thousand Island dressing of a sauce that they serve, I've done some pretty messed up stuff with my mental when it comes to how to con yourself into eating. I've never tricked myself into pretending like, oh, there's lettuce on this thing, so it's healthy now. You know, like that is a whole other type of galaxy brain. I'm not saying that I hate you for it. I like the effort, you know, anything that you can do to make yourself feel better. But like, I mean, I guess they have a bunch of salads. They have wings, but the wings weren't very good, so that to me was,
yeah, they're not great.
And like they have things like the, like I think they, I don't remember eating any of this, but I'm looking at the menu right now, like fried mushrooms, onion rings, white cheddar bites, like things like that I can totally get behind board. But like we're just like ranking it based on the quality of the thing that they serve and they're known for, and it's just like that's just a chicken tender to me.
Yeah, that's fair.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I don't know.
That place that in Manchester, New Hampshire, that Ryan Day grew up working at is really good.
The Puritan Backroom. Weird name for a restaurant, but that's what it's called. Yeah, good. Pretty good. But that's like, that's a one-off.
But there's also a restaurant place in Texas that like is formed at Texas A&M that's a chicken finger place that I was introduced to when I moved here, and I can't remember what it's called.
Is it a money laundering front for recruiting?
It's a money laundering front. It's a slush fund. Lanes is what it's called. Laynes. Have you heard of this place?
I have not.
I'm going to send you the link. It's in Texas, and it's really good. I think it's better than Cane's, and it's better than Zaxby's.
Lanes.
Here, Lanes I sent chicken. You the link. You can check it out on your own time.
I will. Lanes. Or you can check it out right now. Fingers. No, let's get back to talk about the Bucks, because we got to talk about the.
Why?
Because we talked to Jim Knowles, man.
Who's Jim Knowles? We're talking about chicken fingers.
He's Ohio State's new defensive coordinator who grew up in North Philly from Alney. We had a nice conversation.
That's within the Philadelphia limit, right?
That's right. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're not.
Jim Knowles grew up in a place where you don't want to find yourself alone now.
but that wasn't the case when he grew up there, right?
No. It's close to an area of the city called the Badlands, which is where my father, who is now a retired police officer, used to work. Jim Knowlstab is also a Philly cop, so we have that in common, too. We're going to go get cheesesteaks. I can feel it. I think I planted the seed there.
You should take them to that. You should take them to that. That is that Philadelphia cheesesteak place still open in Columbus?
Yes, I told him
about it. That has, like, really, really weird hours, and, like, I tried to eat four or five times during my time in Columbus, and it was always closed.
Yes, it's still open.
It's only open from like 1 to 1:30.
Yeah, it's open from 1 to 1:15 on Wednesdays. That's it.
It does have weird hours, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's like just a window. And they do breakfast now, too, I think, on weekends, which is kind of weird.
Interesting.
But I told Jim Knowles about it because he is a vegan from everything that I've read. But he also said, he said he's not so stringent in that he won't have a cheesesteak every now and then.
Okay. I was going to say, is there such thing as a Philly vegan? I haven't been there in a while, but it doesn't strike me as the most vegan city.
A Philly vegan he only eats vegetables except for pizza and cheesesteaks.
It's a Philly vegan.
It's a Philly vegan. Yeah. He did not have like a tremendous amount to say about like personnel and who's going to play where, and neither did Perry Liano or Tim Walton. And I wasn't expecting that because we talked to them on Monday, and Monday was really like their first time getting together and meeting as a staff and actually talking about personnel. But I did think like if you were hopeful to get the vibe from Jim Knowles that like he understands the urgency at hand and has a clear vision for what he wants this defense to look like, I think you came away feeling pretty good about that. I wondered if like, and I suppose it means nothing, but I wondered if coming from Oklahoma State to Ohio State would be any kind of shock to him, and then like he's sitting there in front of 60 guys in cargo shorts, as you said earlier, having to like explain what he wants to do as a defensive coordinator. And maybe like not coming across the best way of doing that, and that didn't happen at all. Like he was on the ball. Like he was borderline like eager to explain like how he goes about his business, which I like kind of appreciated. So I don't know. I was in on the hire beforehand, and I came away feeling better about it after talking to him.
I read your story and I saw the quote of just like, we don't have 4 years,
right?
And I thought that was obvious, but also good to hear. But the thing that I wanted to talk to you about when it came to that, and for context, if you haven't read Bill's story, you should, but he said at Oklahoma State it took him 3 or 4 years to get to the point that they were this year where they were very good, right? Mm-hmm. And that Ohio State, he doesn't have the luxury of time of having to adjust to it. But the thing that dawned on me, or that the first thing that I thought of when I read that, Bill, was that why would it take 4 years? Their players are really good.
Right.
Like it's like the timeline of expectation is different, but so is the starting point.
I think you're right. And I think he knows that too. It's part of the reason why it took 4 years at Oklahoma State is because Oklahoma State is recruiting a lot of 3-star prospects that need that time to develop into really good players. And a lot of those guys did. I think the idea here is that those guys become really good players much faster, and some of them even show up as really good players. So, I think that does help expedite the timeline a little bit. But it's not like I think some patience is required for like Jim Knowles' system to like really take root here. But I also think like he understands that the offense is going to be awesome, and the defense, I don't even think the defense needs to be awesome. It just needs to be better, like adequate. And if that can be the case, then Ohio State's got something special next year. But he's not like – he didn't sit down in his chair on Monday and say, like, give me some time, guys. Like, I need a couple years to get this thing right. He's like, no, I know. Like, I get it. I know what the deal is here. I'm getting paid a lot of money, and I know what the deal is here.
Yeah.
we're going to try to get this thing fixed, like, right away. Which was, like, again, obvious and, like, the thing you should say. But people don't always say the things they should say in press conferences and intro press conferences. So I was like, okay, all right, I get it. I'm on board.
I mean, it's called the Philly no bullshit attitude.
That's right. That's right. He doesn't have a Philly accent, though. Although I guess
I wonder if if you go look at all the stops that he's made throughout his coaching career, I don't know what accent could survive.
Yeah, he was at Cornell and then like Western Michigan. I don't know.
Yeah. Duke, Oklahoma,
Oklahoma State, and now Ohio.
I don't even think Brian Kelly's Southern accent could make it.
Family, yeah.
I'm down here with my family. Dude, also, the video of him dancing with that tight end was more cringe than anything he did with that accent.
Yeah.
Did he do, like, I don't think anybody said it, but, like, was that, like, the Saturday Night Fever, like, disco?
Why is he standing? Never mind.
Yeah. and the kid's going to Bama. Did you see that?
Yeah, that's hilarious. I'd like to think of that as, like, Nick Saban, Well, like maybe Alabama needs a tight end, but Nick Saban mostly did that just to fuck with Brian Kelly.
Yeah. He doesn't even want him. Yeah.
But yeah, just make Brian Kelly look like a fool.
I have a hard time like deciphering how I feel about LSU's class, because on one hand, they got Harold Perkins out of Texas, but he's also a Katrina transplant.
But oh, is lost, he? I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. But they also lost three of top players in Louisiana in one day, which is like unheard of for LSU. So I'm very curious to see. Like, I will say this, and then I want to talk about Harbaugh. The 2023 cycle is going to be the most interesting recruiting cycle of all time. Mm-hmm. Because there are so many first-year head coaches at prominent positions that have a lot to prove that I think are really good. Like Mario Cristobal at Miami, interesting. Billy Napier at Florida, interesting. Lincoln Riley, USC, interesting. Brent Venables, Oklahoma, interesting. Steve Sarkisian, Texas, interesting. Who am I forgetting? Brian Kelly, LSU, interesting. And like every single region in the country is kind of like, and I'm sure you'll probably work on a story about this, and like how does that impact Ohio State? Because every region that they've traditionally recruited now has like really interesting first-year coaches. But like, if there's ever going to be parity in the top 100 of the recruiting rankings, or top 100 players and the recruiting rankings, like this is the year, right? Yes. Florida gets a little of theirs, Miami gets a little of theirs, LSU gets theirs, USC, Texas, A&M now, who's signed the best class of all time. Ohio State gets theirs, Bama, Georgia, like the least interesting teams right now in recruiting. And I had a recruiting podcast in the Andy Staples feed with Mitch Light the other night. We didn't even talk about Georgia, Clemson, Ohio State, and Alabama. Like it's like not even the thing right now. So it's very interesting. And now Michigan has their coach back, which is a nice segue into that discussion.
Yeah. I guess like before we do that, and we will do that in just a minute. Just to give like first impressions on the other new hires quickly. Like I'm very interested to see how coaching the secondary breaks down between Perry Liano and Tim Walton. And like, there wasn't a whole lot of clarity on that. I think some of it will be joint. They'll be separate. Perry's with the safeties. Tim's with the corners. I tried to ask Ryan Day why Perry Liano, who had the best corners in the country last year, is coaching safeties, and like he didn't answer the question. So I apologize for not having more clarity on that. But in terms of like meshing together, I think it's an interesting blend of personalities there. Like Tim Walton like gave off like Larry Johnson, like fatherly vibes. And Perry Liano gave off like Kerry Combs, I'm a, you know, walking, you know, cup of coffee kind of vibes. Like he's just like, he's a big time energy guy. And I think the two of them together could work out really well, especially in recruiting. And then I just want to read this quote from Justin Fry. Where is it? Oh, I'm the son of a high school coach, so I enjoy recruiting. I like going out to schools and talking to coaches, talking to administrators, going to basketball games, get my popcorn and peanut M&Ms and watching a little bit. He also talked a lot about relationships. He's mentioned recruiting without being prompted like 7 different times.
He also mentioned popcorn once without
he also mentioned popcorn good. Once. Yeah. Yeah. So like, I think he is a good offensive line developer. I'm like intrigued by that and how he might help in the run game, but stark difference, I think, in approach to recruiting from the offensive line coach with the Justin Fry hire, which should be refreshing to Ohio State fans.
Dude, you are in your bag right now about the offensive line recruiting pitfalls. That's like 3 mentions unprompted on the show.
I went back through some of the numbers on that like earlier in the week, and like it was bad. It was pretty bad. It was like we either got a 5-star or, you know, some kid who should be playing at Ball State. So needs to be better.
So the average is still better than the rest of the Big Ten?
Yeah. Because the five stars help. There's got to be – this was the conclusion I came to. There have been a lot of offensive linemen over the last 4 or 5 years like who aren't 5 stars but like top 100, borderline top 100, like top 200 caliber players that Ohio State just like – didn't get that it should have gotten. I think if they would have gotten like 2 or 3 of those guys over the last few cycles, we'd be singing a much different tune about Ohio State's offensive line recruiting. But there's been too much boom or bust with it, and I think there'll be less of that with Justin Fry. Okay, Harbaugh. Apparently, flew to Minnesota thinking he was going to get a job offer and then like didn't get it. Now he's awkwardly coming back to Michigan.
So my understanding of this whole thing, unless there's been more reporting on Thursday morning when I missed while I was sleeping in for the first time in 6 months, was that he decided on his own merit to come back to Michigan. Is that not what happened?
That I do not think that is what happened. I think he flew up there thinking he was going to get wined and dined, and instead it was like an actual job interview, and it ended with him not getting the job offer. So he, I think, maybe like got it out there that he was like not going to do it 30 seconds before Minnesota was like, we have our guy, and it's not Jim Harbaugh. So I think he was trying to save face a little bit there, and also probably tried to curry a little bit of favor with people in Ann Arbor as he awkwardly came back to them.
Nobody does awkward better than Jim Harbaugh, right?
That is correct.
Ohio State perspective, though, Ohio State fans probably happy about this?
Well, that's one thing that I found interesting in terms of the reaction. It was like, people are like, yeah, Harbaugh's back, we're going to kick his ass. It's like, Ryan Day and Jim Harbaugh have coached against each other as head coaches twice. One time Ryan Day kicked his ass, the other time Jim Harbaugh kicked Ryan Day's ass. So it's like, I don't know. What are you certain about? What makes you so sure that, like, Ryan Day might win the next 10? Probably a safer bet than Jim Harbaugh winning, like, two of the next six or whatever. But, like, the assumption that Michigan or Jim Harbaugh is coming back to Michigan to just routinely get his ass kicked by Ohio State again is, like, a little premature, I think. But, yeah. I don't know. I think the general consensus is
Ohio State fans are excited. I would have left Michigan if given the chance, and it sounds like he might not have been given the chance to get away from, to go out on top, to leave as a hero. And I think there's nobody on earth that probably understands more than Jim Harbaugh that what they did last year is not a sustainable thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, to me, I wonder if some of that reaction is, yeah, Jim Harbaugh staying, we're going to continue to kick his ass. Like, that's great. I think that's probably the more root of that is, thank God I didn't play somebody Madden in 10 times, and then the second they beat me, they stop playing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's kind of like a thank God he didn't take his controller and go home type of a thing.
I get that. I get wanting to like get back at him for last year, for sure. I totally understand that sentiment. Whether that's inside the Woody, which I'm sure it is, or outside for fans. Like, I definitely get that. I just felt like I was picking up on a little bit too much of like, haha, we get to be the bully again. It's like, oh, we'll see. You're probably right, but I don't think you're definitely right. So I don't know. I think it's,
I mean, just a matter of like what direction you think that Michigan's, like, personally speaking, I'm going to give it two scenarios. And we're going a little long, so hope you guys are bearing with us, but we didn't have a show last week, so we just missed each other. The scenario where Harbaugh returns and they continue to build off of what they did last year. That's scenario one.
Mm-hmm.
Scenario two, Harbaugh goes to the Minnesota Vikings and then Michigan goes out and hires Matt Rhule or somebody like that who has won at the highest level at college, is a dynamic personality in a way that isn't awkward and has a distinct understanding of what it would probably take to win at Michigan. Like, what is a better scenario for you if you're a Michigan fan? Because I think that Harbaugh returning, even after the greatest year of his career in college, is not the best thing for Michigan. Like, I think Michigan was ready for a change.
It's like a weird thing to say given the season they just have, but
yeah.
I think I kind of agree with you, because the other part of it too is Adam Schefter said, like, Jim Harbaugh told Michigan that, like, this is it. He's not flirting with the NFL anymore. And, like, I don't believe that. So I think this is going to happen every offseason. He very clearly wants to go back to the NFL. Maybe he came to the realization when he was up in Minnesota that it wasn't going to happen. And, like, he's not the youngest guy in the world. So maybe that's true. I don't really believe it. So if you're in the position as Michigan where every offseason your head coach is, like, trying desperately to leave to go back to the NFL, like, that's not a great place to be in. And I also wonder a little bit if, like, what Jim Harbaugh can do at Michigan has been maximized a little bit, and now, like, could it have been a good time to hand that off to somebody else to take it to the next level, whatever that next level might be? So I think I can get on board with that idea. I don't know if that means that this is bad for Michigan that Jim Harbaugh is coming back, because, like, Lord knows the guy understands Michigan.
Well, the third option too, Bill, is Harbaugh leaves, you do a coaching search, and it's a disaster.
Which it certainly could have been if they hired Matt Campbell.
You know, but the one thing I want to say about Jim Harbaugh, and this is an Ohio State podcast, and over the years there have been, you know, jabs at Michigan and their recruiting strategy, and we poke fun at it, you know, because, you know, that's what we do here. I want to say, I don't think Jim Harbaugh's a likable person from a outward personality standpoint, But there's a lot that I respect about that man. Like, they messed with his money and he came back. And not only did he come back after they messed with his money, but he achieved something that most people probably couldn't achieve. So, like, if I were him, I'd be like, fuck this. I'm going to take a job where I'm going to get paid the right way. You mess with my money. Here's what we accomplished and what you thought we couldn't accomplish. And now go try to find somebody else who can do it again. And I think that's like how a normal person would have reacted to that, right? Like, if The Athletic was like, you know what, Bill, we really like your stories, but, you know, you're not getting as much traction on them as we hoped you would. We're going to cut your salary in half and let you come back for a year. And then the following year, you like set record numbers in your stories, you know, traction. And they're like, okay, here's your money back. And then like some other place wanted to hire you for as much money or more. Wouldn't you just like be like, bye? Like, it's just normal. Like, and I understand that Harbaugh's rich already and that he's not going to be hurting for a bowl of soup if he wants one. But like, I think we look at coaches as robots because that's kind of what they are, you know, on camera. But they're also money with, or they're also humans with financial goals. And, you know, money is important to everybody, whether you have $20 in your bank account or whether you have $20 million, everybody always wants more. So like that to me, like how Michigan, instead of firing him, cutting his salary, was just like, it just doesn't sit, it wouldn't have sit well with me if I were him. And like, he came back and did exactly what people thought he couldn't do. And I like respect the hell out of him for that.
Well, he came back because he had no other option. He tried to go to the NFL. There was no job for him there. I don't think he would have gone to another college work. It was like, you're right. Like, he took a pay cut and like took it, I guess, publicly about half of as well a salary. Yeah, but I.
And then once he had, all the things that were.
Had he had a chance to leave, he would have left. If yeah, somebody came to him with a better offer after Michigan tried to cut his money, he would have taken it. He just didn't have it.
Yeah, I guess so. But then after he got all those incentives paid out, he like donated them to people at the university. Like, I thought that
yeah,
was cool as hell.
No, that was very cool. Yeah,
I like the way, like, Jim Harbaugh has always been an odd person, and he doesn't have an agent from what I understand, or he does his own negotiating and all mm-hmm. that shit. Like, just like doesn't emphasize money. Like, he doesn't talk about contract extensions in the middle of the season. Like, all that stuff. Like, I admire about him.
Yeah, and I think he's a good football coach.
Good X's and O's coach.
Right? Yeah, I think he had to recalibrate his recruiting a little bit, which he seems to have done, and was willing to like really like blow up his staff, and I think did a good job with that last year. He seems too great on people, which is why I believe that this is the longest tenure he's had anywhere that he's been. And I would call into question his ability to build a consistent winner because of that. Cause I just think like over time, the relationship becomes so fraught that like it's best for people to just move on. And he's so unpredictable. But he's a good X's and O's coach. And I think I'm not gearing up for like Michigan won the Big Ten and made the playoff last year. And like, this is a step in a direction where that becomes more of a consistent thing. But I think Michigan could be a little better than it was like in his first 5 years.
Yeah, just like right now, off the cuff, what do you think, like, how many games has Michigan beat Ohio State in the next 10 years?
Two or three, maybe.
I think if Michigan gets to a place where it wins 3 out of 10, they've arrived.
If Jim Harbaugh becomes John Cooper?
No, if he goes 3-7 every 10 years... against the machine that Ohio State has become, that is a very successful situation for Michigan, in my opinion. Yeah, that's almost half.
I agree with that. I wonder if Michigan feels the same way. I think they probably do. Because
if you would have asked Michigan before this year, how many times would you like to beat Ohio State next year, keep things going right now, or sell your soul for 3, I think they would take the 3. Because it seemed like it was never going to happen again.
Yeah, I think that's
and like
right.
Especially
yeah.
considering the juggernaut that Ohio State is, like even though Michigan got through and punched through and won, the way these two programs are built are so vastly different. 3 times out of 10 is a lot.
Yep. I mean, 3 times out of I don't know this off the top of my head. I'm making an assumption here that might be wrong, but 3 times out of 10 sounds like what Auburn does to Alabama.
Yeah, and right. I thought when they got rid of their head coach, Gus Malzahn, I was like, that's insane. Go find somebody else who can beat Bama. And they finally found another coach, and then
he's going to get fired soon.
Yeah, well, they should have won that game 3 different times and didn't. So, you know, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing as it pertains to, you know, Auburn's positioning in that rivalry. But, you know, I think that it's good that Jim Harbaugh has stayed,
because it's kind of interesting.
Fun. It's more fun.
It's more fun. Like you mentioned on this podcast, after he beat Ohio State, he's talking shit. He told Ryan Day that he was born on third base. He's walking like Vince McMahon back into the wrestling ring, and the only reason why I know what that is because everybody uses that gif. But like, if he becomes the Jim Harbaugh of year one again after they won, that would be awesome. It would be irritating to Ohio State fans, but like, don't we kind of want the 10-year? Like, that's the point that we've made, or I've been making for the past 10 years of like, the rivalry is dead. This sucks. It's boring. It's just like Michigan won. It sucks. I know Ohio State fans like resent that. I'm not saying that you should be okay with it, but the good news is that like now, part of being a fan is like fixating on kicking the shit out of Michigan next year, which is something you haven't had in a long time. So,
yeah,
I'm all about that life.
Yeah, and that the fixation on wanting to get back at Michigan has a different tenor to it when Jim Harbaugh's still there.
Sure. I think it's like, can you imagine like if Matt Campbell were just the head coach next year? Like, you would still want to beat them. You still hate Michigan, but it's like, who hates Matt Campbell? You know? It's like, it's so much easier to hate Jim Harbaugh than it is to hate like Matt Rhule.
Yeah, villain. Yeah, you need a good villain.
I guess Mike Hart is easy to hate too.
Mike Hart, but there would be something there, I guess. Yeah.
But he was 0-4 as a player, so then who cares? You know, like, unless he starts opening his mouth. Here's the thing. I don't know if you saw the Jimbo Fisher NIL rant yesterday, but like, I loved it. And I, like, if I were a coach, I would act like that all the time. So, like,
it felt like he was kind of spitting into the wind a little bit, but
yeah.
But it was like, I like when coaches like just fly off the cuff like that and like don't speak in sound bites. I thought that was
cool. West Virginia man moves to Texas, wears gold Rolex and cowboy boots to official visit weekend.
The glare from his $50,000 watch is blinding you as he's telling you about it. This isn't about money. Yeah, I don't want to Google it because I don't want to know that there's watches out there that cost more than my house.
There are. I got news for you.
Yeah. All right.
Well, there are watches out there that cost more than houses in Bexley, too, so don't feel bad.
Yeah, I'm sure there are. Yeah, I'll never own one. I got a nice Apple watch, though. It tells me when I need to get my fat ass up and start moving, so I like it.
There was like, it's so funny. I saw a meme the other day that said, you know, 20 years ago, working out like it was a good thing, and now our culture is like at a point where our watch congratulates us for standing. It does. Like, congratulations. Good job. You did it. You stood up, you fat piece of shit.
You stood for a minute. You met your goal. I was like, what? This is easy. All right. I'm going to be dead in 10 years, but at least
it makes you feel like you achieved something.
Yeah.
Right. Doesn't it? It's just like, oh, yeah, I got my stand goal today. Like, what? So even if you stood for 1 minute 12 times, you could have the laziest, biggest piece of shit day on the face of the earth and still hit your stand goal. Why is that even a thing?
I like the days where I'm in the car all day driving from here to Philadelphia, and I'm just literally sitting in the car for 7 hours, and my movement range just keeps filling up, and it's like, you achieved your goal. And it's like, I've literally been sitting for 8 hours. I didn't do anything.
Do you actually can achieve your goal from driving?
I don't know if it's just like my hand on the steering wheel, like moving a little bit from time to time, but like, I'll get out of the car in Philadelphia, and it's like, you achieved your goal. And it's like, that's impossible. I didn't do anything. But I'll take it. I'll take the clothes.
Well, you have to readjust your goal. How many calories is it?
It's like 750 or something.
And that's like 750 calories that you burned moving your body?
Yeah, I burn like 3,000 calories just existing because of how big I am. But the problem is I eat more than that every day, so I don't maintain a caloric deficit. You know what I mean? Yeah. Raising canes.
What you got to do is decrease your input and increase your metabolic output.
That's right. You'll all be doing this by Labor Day. All right, let's end the show after an hour and 15 minutes, shall we? Thank you for listening to 4 to 6 with A&B. We appreciate it. We appreciate you guys being patient with us as we took a little time off there. It'll get slower here, I think, for Ohio State. Spring ball is probably 5 or 6 weeks away, but we'll have more shows before then. Please subscribe to The Athletic, theathletic.com/4-6. Give us a 5-star review on Apple, if you'd be so kind. We'd appreciate it. And we'll talk to you guys next time.